Easter we say he is risen indeed. Today we say he is here indeed. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Cliff. Andy in the back. Well, welcome and a happy Mother's Day. The sun is shining and birds are singing. Flowers are blooming. It is a good day. I thought Mother's Day, how does Deuteronomy sound? Deuteronomy sound okay for Mother's Day? I don't know that that's ever happened before. But we are going to continue working our way through what we have been calling the Jesus backstory, the backstory that is the Torah. Again, keeping in mind the Torah is divided into 54 parshiot, 54 sections. We've been working our way through for the last, I don't know, year and a half or so. Breaks here and there, but working our way through. Today we come to number 45, the 45th of the 54 parshiot, the second one in Deuteronomy, Parsha Vayetanan. It picks up in Deuteronomy 3 and 23 and runs through chapter 7 and verse 11. If you are grabbing a Pew Bible, page 128 will be helpful. The words will be on the screen behind me. And so let's get started here. Deuteronomy chapter 3 and verse 23, it says, we read, Vayetanan, which gives us again the name of this parsha. Translated here, it translates as, and I pleaded. Vayetanan, el Adonai, and I pleaded with the Lord, Vayet Haiv Lamor, at that time, saying. And with that, we begin what Rabbi Jonathan Sacks calls some of the most sublime theological passages in the whole of Judaism. Some of the greatest, some of the most magnificent theological passages in the whole of Judaism. At the heart of it are the famous words from the Shema, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Noting these, as he says, as he puts it, these famous words encompass not only the central declaration of Judaism, but even more, the central declaration of Jesus, flowing in and all through his life. These famous words, right, are the central declaration of Jesus, most notably for today from the Gospel of Matthew. And so now we're going to leave Deuteronomy for a bit and go over to Matthew, Matthew chapter 22. This is a passage we've looked at and no doubt you are familiar with. It always deserves another round. And so we're going to head to Matthew and 22. If you're grabbing a Pew Bible or still in a Pew Bible, 699 will be helpful. Matthew 22 and verse 34. It says, we read, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, it says, an expert in the law, from the Greek nomikos. Nomikos, it's often translated as lawyer, or it can be translated as scribe. I think scribe fits very well. In Mark's gospel, it's grammateus, which would be a teacher of the law or an expert. So either way, it's an expert, a nomikos, a lawyer, a scribe. Keeping in mind that in the ancient world in that day, there was no universal education. Literacy was poor. And with that, then, we also had the written Torah regulating Jewish life. And so these nomikos, these lawyers, these scribes, would have been not only very popular, but they were very much in demand, in high demand. From the scholar James Edwards, he notes there, meaning these experts in the law, their scholarship and prestige reached legendary proportions by the first century, surpassing on occasion that of the high priest. The first seats in the synagogues were reserved for the scribes, for these nomikos, and people rose to their feet when they, the nomikos, entered a room. And so here we have this expert in the law, this expert in matters related to the law. He is a Pharisee. He has overheard Jesus debating with, having a dispute with the Sadducees. The Pharisees and Sadducees kind of comprised the Jewish ruling power of the day. And now this Nomikos, this lawyer, this scribe, this expert in the law, he now comes, it says, testing him, testing Jesus, with this question. He says, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Keeping in mind, and we've talked about this some, and so this might be by way of remembrance for some of you, but contained in the Torah, contained in those first five books of our Bibles, contained in the 54 Parshiot, are 613 laws, 613 mitzvot. 613 mitzvot that make up, that are referred to as the written law. And so on the one hand, we have written law. In addition, we have what is this oral tradition, also believed to have been given to Moses when he was up on Mount Sinai. This oral law expounds on the written law. And so we have oral law and written law. And with that, it was not uncommon for lawyers, for scribes, to differentiate then between what they consider to be the heavy or the heaviest, but the heavy mitzvot, and what were the light mitzvot. Heavy, think greatest, think most significant, think most important. Light, we think secondary, we think not so significant, less important. From the scholar Ben Witherington, there was in early Judaism a great deal of dispute about how to rank the 613 mitzvot in the Hebrew Scriptures in terms of, it says, of importance, and even more debate as to which one was the most crucial, the most paramount of these commandments, of these mitzvot, which could be used as a hermeneutical tool to interpret the rest. Again, from the scholar Edwards, he says, "It was not uncommon to ask reputed teachers, as the Nomikos does in this instance, to declare themselves on the weightiest of the commandments, or to summarize the Torah in a nutshell." In fact, we have record of two of the most noted Jewish scholars and rabbis, Hillel and Shammai, declaring themselves. It's found, it's back from the first century BC, it's found in the Talmud, where a Gentile man, a non-Jewish man, wants to convert to Judaism. And so he comes forward and states that he would only accept Judaism on the condition that the rabbi, he says, teach me the entire Torah while I am standing on one foot. And so first he goes to Rabbi Shammai, who is not impressed by this question, who is actually insulted, and we read, he pushed him away with the builder's cubit. But not giving up, the man then goes to Rabbi Hillel, who responds, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. That is the whole Torah. The rest is interpretation." Now, point being here that there are all sorts of conversations, all kinds of arguments, all kinds of debates about which commandment, right, is the heaviest. Which commandment is the most important, right? Which mitzvot, right, is the greatest, surpasses all others? And here, Jesus is being asked that very question. What is the one in all of Torah by which we interpret all the rest? To which Jesus then responds, noting that he responds here, he's quoting from the Torah, he's quoting from Deuteronomy, he's quoting from Parsha Vatanan, he's quoting from the Shema, right? And by the way, the Shema is recited twice a day by every devout Jew, every morning, every evening, by every devout Jew to this day. Quoting the famous words from the most sublime theological passage in all of Judaism. And he says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind." Right, the heaviest, the greatest, the one by which we interpret all others. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. And in essence, meaning love God with all of the you that is you. Right? Heart, soul, mind, thoughts, feelings, activities, appetites, passions, attitude, abilities, love the Lord your God with all of the you that is you. But then what we want to notice is Jesus doesn't stop there, right? He goes on. He does say this is the first and greatest commandment, right? Meaning this is the commandment, right, above all commandments. This is the mitzvot above all mitzvot. This is the one by which we interpret all the others. And then he goes on, verse 39, and the second is like it. And the second is like it, which is interesting. That comes from the Greek word homoios. It means equally or in the same way, not different. From the theologian John Schneider, they are in agreement, so close that they can often be used interchangeably. And here is Jesus. He gives us the first commandment, the greatest commandment, the commandment by which all others are interpreted. And then he says, here's another one, in essence, equally, in the same way, not different, in agreement, interchangeable with, love your neighbor as yourself. The point here really is that Jesus, he's saying that this idea of loving God, this activity of loving God is intimately connected with loving others equally, right? In the same way, not different, in agreement, interchangeable with loving God and loving others. 1 John 4:20 makes this clear. We've read this before. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he, God, verse 21, and he, God, he has given us this command, anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. Again, equally, in the same way, not different, in agreement, interchangeable with. Keeping in mind, loving your neighbor as yourself is another quote. It comes from Leviticus. We passed through it when we were back in Leviticus and Parsha Kedoshim. It's found here in kind of the midst of a laundry list of do's and don'ts, mostly don'ts, do nots. Leviticus 19 and verse 11, I want to read through this. We read here, do not steal, do not lie, do not deceive one another, do not swear falsely by my name and so profane the name of your God, I am the Lord. Do not defraud or rob your neighbor, do not hold back the wages of a hired worker overnight. Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind, but fear your God. I am the Lord. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the rich, but judge your neighbor fairly. Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I am the Lord. Do not hate a fellow Israelite in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly so you will not share in their guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. And so, yes, Jesus here, he quotes Leviticus, he quotes Parsha Kedoshim, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. But what I want us to see here is that this quoted line is written really contextually, wrapped within all kinds of relational sorts of dynamics here, right? The obvious one is neighbor, but also we read hired worker, there's the deaf, the blind, the poor, the rich. As well, it goes on to say not defrauding, not robbing, not cursing, not spreading slander, not endangering, not hating, not seeking revenge, not bearing a grudge. And with that, Jesus, he breaks down our walls of separation. He breaks down our walls of separation. He crosses the dividing line of our differentness. And in its place, he calls us, he invites us to the way of justice and care and compassion. Right, all wrapped up in those words, love your neighbor as yourself. Which I just want to say has nothing to do with the warm fuzzies, Okay, love your neighbor as yourself. It has nothing to do with feeling warm fuzzies, right? But it's all about how we engage with one another. It has everything to do with how we act toward one another, how we treat one another. And then verse 40, Jesus kind of wraps it up. He says, all the law and the prophets, noting that phrase is an ancient Jewish way of referring to the whole of the Tanakh, the whole of what we call the Old Testament, and most notably includes the 613 mitzvot, right, found all throughout. He says, all the law and prophets hang on, meaning depend on these two commandments, right? Orbit around these two commandments, right? Everything else being interpreted in light of these two commandments, right? It's through them that we interpret all the rest, right? Through loving God with all of the you that is you and loving your neighbor as yourself. Again, equally in the same way, not different, in agreement, interchangeable with. From the scholar Edwards, for Jesus, the Shema cannot be fulfilled in ritual or sacrifice, but in love of God wholly and genuinely. Love of neighbor, moreover, is the chief means of loving God and is received as love of God. Likewise, love of God expresses itself in love of neighbor. Which I think really begs the question then, and I think it's an appropriate one on Mother's Day. Are we living this way of love? Are we living this way of love? We could ask it this way. We could ask, does my life center around loving God and loving others? Does my life orbit around loving God and loving others? Right? Equally, in the same way, not different, in agreement, interchangeable with. In everything, am I moving toward this way of love? In everything, am I moving toward this way of love? Breaking it down a bit, we could ask, am I seeking to love God with all of the me that is me? Am I seeking to love God with all of the me that is me? And again, we can think heart, soul, mind, thoughts, feelings, activities, passions, appetites, attitude, abilities. Am I seeking to love God with all of the me that is me? And with that, then we could ask, am I seeking to love my neighbor as myself? Which I'll just add, again, it's not about warm fuzzies. In that day, it was as much a statement about status as it was about any sort of feeling. This is not a feeling love. This is really not even about self-esteem. It was really a statement of status, of not seeing another as less than. And it's everything to do with how we engage with one another, act toward one another, treat one another. Am I seeking to love my neighbor as myself? Keeping in mind here, love, agape in the Greek, I think the best definition I've heard is it's a love that seeks nothing but the highest good of the other. Right? It seeks nothing but the highest good of the other. And so we could ask, am I seeking nothing but the highest good of the other? Am I seeking nothing but the highest good of all others? Am I seeking nothing but the highest good of that other who really gets under my skin? Am I seeking the highest good of that one that I really don't get along with too well? Am I seeking nothing but the highest good of my neighbor? And then to that, we could add in the Hebrew, ahava. Ahava is the word translated love in the Hebrew. It's interesting that ahava is rooted in the word hav. Hav means to give. This idea that central to loving is giving. In fact, there's a phrase, I give, therefore I love. And with that, we could ask, are my relationships with others rooted in the pursuit of, in the activity of giving? Are my relationships with others rooted in the pursuit of the activity of giving? And with that, I'll bring it to a close. How is God inviting me to love Him and love others more fully? How is God inviting me to love Him and love others more fully? Va'atanan, El Adonai, Va'at Ha'iv, Lamor, and I pleaded with the Lord at that time, saying,